Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now Margaret Atwood. She is, of course, the renowned writer, Booker Prize winner, and the best-selling author of more than 35 books of poetry, nonfiction, and fiction, including The Handmaid's Tale, and more recently of a book of essays called Payback, Debt, and the Shadow Side of Wealth. And that book has now been adapted into a documentary directed by Jennifer Beishwal called Payback. It's starting a two-week run at the Film Forum in Lower Manhattan tomorrow. Margaret Atwood and Jennifer Beishwal, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Margaret, the book and the film are not about the debt crisis in Europe, as you know. It's not about credit default swaps or underwater mortgages in this country. So what is Payback about?
Payback is about the way we exchange things as human beings, because we are a social being and we're constantly exchanging. And those exchanges create imbalances, and we call the downside debt, and we call the upside credit. And just on a very, very fundamental level, if you're in your car and you let somebody in front of you and they don't give you a wave, how do you feel? Or take 4-year-olds who are constantly saying, it's not fair, or his is bigger. So it's about that and the way it plays out in a huge number of areas of life, including revenge and including environmental imbalances and, of course, including how we handle, quotes, debts to society through the criminal justice system.
So not just monetary debt, the very idea of debt to another human being.
That's right.
Jennifer, this was originally a lecture by Margaret, then a book published in 2008. You decided to adapt it into a documentary, and you tell the story of debt through 4 different stories: an Albanian blood feud over land, the BP oil disaster in the Gulf, mistreated tomato farm workers in Florida, and the imprisoned media mogul Conrad Black. Now, Conrad Black is a Canadian-born former media mogul, writer, and member of the British House of Lords, who was convicted in 2007 of diverting company funds for personal gain, a claim he denies. Here's a clip of Conrad Black from the film.
The concept of people paying a debt to society for some statutory infraction of some gravity, but having done so, having put it behind them and it being forgiven, is a concept that I think has largely been lost sight of sociologically. There is a tendency to stigmatize and permanently ostracize those who have put a foot wrong to that extent.
Conrad Black, you want to talk about that, Jennifer, that notion that a prison term is paying back a debt to society?
Well, it's an interesting concept of what does it mean to pay your debt to society. And, of course, Black, who was imprisoned and, in fact, is still in jail, he gets out on May 4th, has very strong ideas about what is wrong with the American justice system. And we contrast his story with another prisoner in the film, Paul Muhammad, who has been in and out of jail most of his life and is extremely remorseful. And the kind of contrast of this wealthy person who claims he is innocent and this person who is filled with remorse, who, you know, the question you could ask when you think about Paul Muhammad's story is what debt does society owe to him, is a very interesting one.
And let me play a clip of Paul Muhammad and see how you would answer that question for yourself. He's in jail for, it seems like, a multitude of things: stealing jewelry from a Holocaust survivor, for a little bit of crack, perhaps chief among them. And here he is talking about the psychology of it.
It just kind of feeds itself, because then I feel so guilty about what I did that I want to keep getting high because I feel like crappy because of what I did. And then I go out and I do it again because I don't want to come down and feel like, what the f*** are you doing? Why did you do that?
So that's a spiral of guilt as a kind of debt.
Absolutely. And I think that when you think about, I mean, Black's position, and of course, he probably never would have spent time with the kind of people he did end up spending quite a lot of time with in prison, have really, I think, liberalized his views. And he recognizes that stigma, I mean, it's very difficult for someone like Paul Muhammad to ever kind of get out of that cycle, I would suggest.
But why, given what he did, do you suggest that society owes a debt to Paul Muhammad?
Because Paul Muhammad had a terrible life and a terrible childhood with an abusive father. And when he tells you his story, I mean, his mother tells a story about him being strung up in a tree in the middle of winter by people at school who taunted him and called him Packy and left him to freeze. And they found him at night, you know, in the dark. Those are the kind of things that happened to him. So, I mean, it may be a bleeding heart liberal perspective to say that society owes a debt to Paul Muhammad, but I believe it does. That's not to say that what he did is acceptable by any means. It's a complicated balance, as Margaret suggested.
Margaret, you have a chapter in your book called Debt as Sin, and you talk about religion and the debt load of sin inherited from Adam. And you say debt is a form of slavery. In Islamic culture, debt is particularly frowned upon. In a region in Albania, according to the movie, families who enter into blood feuds over land debts are doing something that is considered very normal. So talk about how debt becomes sinful and how does that affect what debt is in our culture?
Well, that's about 100 questions. Let's try to sort of sieve them out a little bit. Every religion that we know about has got some kind of idea that good should be rewarded with good and bad should be rewarded with bad or punished with bad. And that if that's not going to happen in this life, there should be in the afterlife a way of dealing with that. And I begin with the ancient Egyptian religion in which when you died, the first thing that happened to you was that your heart got weighed on a balance. And on the other side of the balance was the feather of the goddess of truth. And that signified not just whether you told lies, but whether you had lived in accordance with the balance of the universe. And if your heart was found lacking, it got fed to a crocodile god. So it was...
if it was heavier than the feather,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
If it was weighed down with bad deeds. So you as a being, you owed something to the balance of the universe. And if you had thrown it out of balance, you had to rectify that by getting your heart eaten by a crocodile.
And here's almost a classic example from the film of capitalism at its worst, I think you might say. This is activist and academic Raj Patel on freedom and capitalism.
You are only as free as the amount of cash that you can wield and the power that in turn confers to you. If you are poor in a free market, freedom is just another word for nothing that you can afford. And so, you know, the freest agents in our economy today are the large corporations and the mega wealthy. And for the rest of us, we live with the consequences, the environmental and the social consequences of their actions.
So that was kind of an abstract thought, but it related, Jennifer, to tomato farm workers in Florida,
yes,
who you also follow in the film.
We followed the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, a group of workers that organized themselves who have made enormous strides in farm worker justice. And, of course, there were real cases of slavery in southern Florida with these farm workers. And I was interested in that, in this idea of debt. If you look at capitalism, as you say, there has to be something at the bottom. What does the bottom of this economic system look like? And this is the bottom of it. And as we filmed these, this coalition over the course of a year and a half, we were down there four or five times, this quite extraordinary thing happened, which is that the owner of Pacific Tomato Growers decided to sign an agreement, not just a fair food agreement, but a sort of bill of rights for these workers, which had enormous repercussions. And he did it in a way to pay back.
So, Margaret Atwood, how do you change the dynamic of this kind of debt?
The tomato workers won, the environmental won, the sin won, or the revenge won.
Well, I was thinking about the tomato workers, but take your pick.
Well, with the tomato workers, you do what the owner did, which is pay them more. so that they're not actually making less than it takes them to live.
And give them basic rights.
So that they have a say, they have some kind of voice.
Which I think gets back to the original concept that we started with when talking about your book. If how we think about debt changes how debt works, how should we think about debt, like on a day-to-day basis?
I think we should think of it not as something just having to do with money or having to do with these arcane financial manipulations involving so many billions of dollars we can't even think about it, but we should think of it as part of a human interchange, which is at the very basis of who we are. We are an interchanging being. And at the basis of that is the notion of fairness, because if we didn't believe in fairness, we would never lend anybody anything because we would know we would never get it back. So we should think of it as part of a human interchange, not some abstract thing that's happening up in the cloud.
So for a conversation that started out about credit cards and this kind of thing and what people usually think of when you say the word debt, this could apply to relationships with our colleagues at work. This could apply to our marriages.
Absolutely.
The whole set of different kinds of courtesies that we offer each other as human beings, however we interact with them or not, and accumulate credits or debts.
You're on the planet because somebody was nice to you as a baby. They didn't throw you out the window. They fed you.
And we are a cooperative species, I would say, more than we are a competitive species. I think that's how we've survived.
But we don't want to think of this in too transactional a way, too,
no.
That you be nice to somebody because then they're going to owe you one.
No, I think you're nice to somebody because other people were nice to you. Mm. I think that's more or less how it gets passed on. But the negative is if everybody's been really horrible to you, it's very hard for you to see the world as a place where people exchange nice things.
That's such a fascinating idea to me, being nice to somebody because somebody else was nice to you. It's much more karmic than transactional that way.
Yes. Well, and I think that's how gifts work, certainly in the artistic area. I can't pay back William Shakespeare for everything that he's given me, but I can maybe mentor some.
You can write a book?
Young person. Yeah, I can. Yeah,
well, or two or 35.
Done that.
You know, I'm curious to get back to the jail example, prison as debt to society, and Conrad Black's concern that we're losing the notion of having paid back your debt after you serve your time. I don't know how many states exactly do or don't allow people to vote after they've served prison time, but many don't. And so you're considered a permanent outcast in terms of your basic citizenship in this country.
Well, as he says, you're permanently stigmatized and ostracized, and I think that creates this huge underclass of people who cannot participate in society in a successful and healthy way. And I think there's something wrong with that, and I think that's probably one of his major points about his experience in the prison system here.
He's going to have a lot to say when he gets out.
Yes.
And even people living in privileged circumstances don't want that stigmatization. One of the last things that Ronald Reagan did in office was to pardon George Steinbrenner for his felony conviction for illegal campaign contributions to the Nixon campaign.
Right. Gosh.
And George Steinbrenner was living a perfectly fine life, but he got that unresolvable debt off his back in a way.
Mm-hmm. Did he get a little lapel pin? No.
I don't know. I think he got very good seats at the stadium, though.
Redeemed.
Last question, Margaret, totally off the topic. We're doing a series called End of War. We're asking our listeners and some of our guests the question, is war inevitable or can people abolish war once and for all? And you think about big questions, human nature, global ideas. Have you ever given thought to the question as to whether humans could ever abolish war?
Frequently. I'm old enough to actually remember the Second World War. Hands up, everybody who can do that. And wars don't end when they end. The consequences, the fallout goes on for really a long time. It's a very crippling thing. Could it be ended? In theory, yes. Is it going to be difficult? Absolutely, because it is so extremely profitable for a number of people.
Margaret Atwood, her book, Payback, Debt and the Shadow Side of Wealth, has now been turned into a documentary directed by Jennifer Bashwell, who's been our other guest. It's starting a 2-week run at the Film Forum tomorrow night. A great, great conversation. Thank you both very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Good luck with the film, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.